Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 9th of Elul. Today we're going to learn some of what Rabbi Uziel wrote about the fundamentals of Shemitah. This is from Shut Mishpatei Uziel, the 4th volume, Inyanim Klaliyim, General Ideas, Simon Tet Zion, Chapter 16. It's from the 9th of Elul of Tafresh Tzadi Vav of 1936, which was close to Tuf Reish Tzadi Zayin, which was a Shemitah year. So as an upcoming Shemitah year, he's going to review some of the issues that come up in terms of Shemitah issues. It's a good reminder that one of the joys, wonders, whatever the right term would be, of the renewal of the great renewal of inhabitants of settlement of Eretz Israel was that it brought to life halachic issues that had been very theoretical. So Shemitah had been observed for several times already by the time Uziel is writing this, but it's still, there are large influxes of people coming in, and for them there are new issues coming up and new questions coming up. So this is a very basic review, but I know that I myself don't always remember these simple issues, and that there's often room for a review of these issues, and that it's productive for people to write about it and to spread the word about what Shemitah issues are and what and how to start thinking about them. So he says that the general categories of prohibited malacha, prohibited activities on Shavuot during Shemitah, is working the land in terms of trying to produce product, in terms of trying to grow things in the land. Then there's also working trees or working on trees that they should also produce fruit. So there's the land and there's the trees. And there's a pasuk that says sadecha lo tizra, you can't plant your field, so that's working the land. V'charmecha lo tizmor. And you also can't, so tizmor means to cut back, to trim. Your kerem would be your vineyard, but it's taken in halacha to mean not just vines, but also anything to do with trees and working on trees. So he says there are four basic melachot that regarding Shemitah and these issues. There's melechet hakarka, there's working on the land that's usher d'oraita at a Torah level, that one would get malkot for. If one transgressed it in front of witnesses and they gave warning and the person decided to do it anyway and they were brought to court, they get malkot for. And those are zriah uzmira, planting, putting seeds in the ground so that they should grow, or zmira, cutting back a vine. And the reason is that even though zmira isn't a planting of anything, it is an action done to produce more, to bring more. So the same way I put a seed in the ground so that it'll grow, let's say, wheat or whatever it is, I see the ground for that. Cutting back a vine is what's going to make it grow more and produce more grapes or whatever it is. But Rav Uziel points out, but we count it as a avodat hakarka, even though it's really on a tree, it's on a vine or a tree, nonetheless it's grouped with avodot hakarka, it's grouped with things that we do in the ground, because it's very similar to it in terms of its outcome. Because zmira is really like planting, because by planting you produce a new seed, a new plant, a new whatever, and they're true. By cutting back the tree, you get new branches, and you not just more, but new branches. And that's what Rashi says, that a person who is a zomer, who trims things, the point is litzmoach kizorea. That's from Gemara Moed Katan. The beginning of Moed Katan has a lot of discussion of these Shemitah issues. Now we turn to the tree, melachot that have to do with the tree, there's kitzira ubitzira, that, and their purpose is to improve the tree, that it will be better poised to bring out fruit. So kitzira is cutting things down, and bitzira is reaping or harvesting it, and all of this will help the tree grow and help the tree produce more fruit, and those are the four avot melachot that are asur midoraita, that are Torah prohibition during Shemitah, and when we get malkot for those four things. Then there are other activities that are asur d'oraita, that are prohibited from the Torah, but there's no malkot for them. So examples of this are charisha, plowing, or chafira bakarka, if one digs in the ground. So this isn't plowing. Plowing is when you turn over the ground to loosen up the dirt for various reasons. We'll see some of them as we go along. But chafira is they dig a hole in the ground, so it can be for strengthening a tree or helping a tree grow. There are various reasons I can dig into the ground. So those things are not directly related to planting. They're prohibited from the Torah. They are biblically prohibited, but they wouldn't incur malkot because they're not specifically named in the Torah. So he quotes a Rambam who says that it's the mitzvat asei. It is a positive commandment in the Torah. Lishbot me'avodat haaretz ve'ha'ilan bashivit, to rest or desist from working the land during the Shemitah year, as the pasuk says, v'shavetah haaretz shabbat l'Hashem. And then it also says becharish v'katzir tishbot. Pasuk explicitly says that one should be shovet. There is this positive commandment to desist from charish, which would be plowing, and then katzir would be reaping. And then the Rambam says, v'chol osem melacha, whoever does one of these melachot, is bitel asei, is neglecting to fulfill a positive commandment, an obligation, ve'avar al lotas, and has transgressed a prohibition of sadecha lo tizra ve'kamecha lo tizmor. Then the Rambam continues, but the malkot midoraita, the Torah's prohibited malkot, would only be for planting zriah or en zmirah, trimming, cutting back a vine or cutting back a tree for it to grow more, or kitzirah or betzirah, or reaping or harvesting. Right? And that would be true of a kerem, it would be true of a vineyard, it would be true of other trees, and zmirah is part of zriah, and they're all related to each other, right? They're all sort of related activities. The trimming back is included in zriah, and the taking down from trees is included in harvesting grain or other products from the field. So why did the Torah list them specifically, then the Rambam says, lomar al shtei toladot elu bilvad chayav, that only these two outgrowth of the larger category, meaning the larger category is you can't harvest your produce, then why does the Torah need to tell me that not only can't you harvest your produce that grows in the ground, you also can't harvest your produce that grows on a tree? So the Rambam says it's true. The tree one is a tolada, is an outgrowth of the original one. Why is it an outgrowth? Because when I take fruit off a tree, for example, I'm not taking anything out of the ground, I'm taking it off the tree. So if the ground is what's supposed to be resting, theoretically one could have said, what's on the tree isn't a function of the ground resting or not resting. So that's why it's called a tolada. The category, as it were, the overall category would be working of the land. And the Torah explicitly tells us, but it includes toladot. But since it tells us which toladot, it tells us these two toladot, that means that only those two toladot would produce malkot d'oraita. But other toladot, other things that are, so the idea of tolada and av, I haven't explained as well as I could have, it's sort of familiar to us from Hilchot Shabbat, that the Torah will describe something as being prohibited, and that's called the av, it is the overall category. And then there are things that are directly the exact same thing as that av, and those would be part of the av. But there are other activities that are very close or very similar to, or extensions of that idea, and those might be us, or those are us, or often, on a Torah level, but they're called toladot because they're not exactly that which was named by the Torah. So here too, the harvesting from a tree is considered a tolada, and even though it's a tolada, it's prohibited to oraita. And so the ones on the tree that were named in the Torah are prohibited d'oraita and would incur the same d'oraita punishment. But the reason the Torah expressed them, wrote them down explicitly, according to the Rambam, is that for the rest of the toladot, and the other avot also that weren't made explicit in the pasuk, you won't get malkot. But you will get, and here's where we get to trouble, this is the Rambam in Shemitah and Yovel in Perek Aleph, there it says you will get Makat Mardut. So Makat Mardut generally would sound like it means Dirabanan, because we usually think of Makat Mardut, which is that the rabbis give lashes to a person for his or her failure to observe their commandments. That sounds like a Dirabanan. So the Rav Uziel says, it seems that the Rambam is contradicting himself. First he writes that if you do any malacha, you've neglected an obligation, and you violate a prohibition. That sounds like it's a biblical problem, a biblical issue, a biblical command to observe it. And then he writes that you won't get Malkot Min HaTorah, you'll only get Malkot Makat Mardut, which sounds like a Derabanan. So that's the question. One more question. The Rambam also records the halacha that you have in the Mishnah and the Gemara about Eser Nitiyot Mefuzarot Latok Beit Se'ah. If you have young plants, so they need more care, and you've just planted things, and if they're left for the whole Shemitah, they will die. There is a halacha la Moshe Misinai, that if you have 10 of them within a Beit Se'ah, Beit Se'ah is 50 amot by 50 amot. It's the amount of land that can produce, or where you plant a Se'ah of seed, I think, or produces a sa'av product. I always forget. But I know that I looked it up. It's 50 amot by 50 amot, which is, you know, depending on how long an amma is between 1.5 and 2 feet. So it would be something like 75 by 75 feet or 100 by 100 feet. So it would be somewhere in the area of, you know, between 5,000 and 10,000 square feet, which is, you know, a relatively, I guess, kind of large area. So in that kind of an area, if you have 10 plants, as many as at least 10, right? Fewer than that, you wouldn't be allowed to. If you have 10, you're allowed to, in what's called Tosefet Shvi'it, in the time running into Shemitah, which would be like Elul, the month before Shemitah starts, you're still allowed to plow in that whole Beit Se'ah until Rosh Hashanah. That's Halakha L'Moshe B'Sinai, that even though there's ordinarily a rule called Tosefet Shvi'it, that already in the Elul before Shvi'it starts, you have to start observing some of the obligations of Shvi'it. When it comes to these Nitiyot, you don't have to observe Tosefet Shvi'it. You can go all the way up to Rosh Hashanah. But if Harisha, if plowing itself is not Doraita, as Rav Uziel is saying, that Rambam sounds like, because the Rambam had said that you would only get, the person who does it would only get Makat Mardut, which seems to be a Derabbanan punishment, then why would you need a Halakha L'Moshe M'Sinai to say that you're allowed to do Harisha in Elul? It should have said that when it came to Esther Netiyot, to those 10 young plants, the Chazal weren't Gozer, they didn't decree the problem of Harisha, of plowing, before the advent, the actual advent of the Shemitah year. And the Pre-Chadash had asked that question. The Rambam, the Pre-Chadash had left it as a Tzara Qiyin, and he said he didn't understand what the Rambam meant. So the Rav Uziel notices that the Radvaz came upon that Rambam and understood it, and the Radvaz explained, that there are actually three kinds of plowing. There's plowing whose only purpose is to improve the land. Okay, so that's just for the purposes of the land, meaning there's no planting going on in this land right now in this Shemitah year. You just want to plow it because you want to soften up the land, maybe for future years, but that's all you're doing. So that is not prohibited at a Torah level. So if somebody during a Shemitah year wants to go through their field and just turn over the dirt, that is not, according to Rambam, prohibited on a Torah level, on a Torah level. And that's why the Rambam writes, "Hachofer achoresh letzorech hakarka," for the needs of the land. That would be, if somebody did that, it's prohibited Rabbanan, but not Deoraita, and therefore if somebody did it anyway, the punishment they would get would be a rabbinic punishment. But there's another kind of harisha. When somebody puts seeds in the ground, you want to cover those seeds. So what will often be done is you'll plow the land, put the seeds in, and then plow it again so the seeds get buried under the dirt. So that's harisha lechapot haziraim, to cover over the seeds. That's really just planting. And so that planting is a full doraita prohibition of planting, even though it looks like plowing. It's really an example or a way to plow. And then the third kind is harisha letzorech gidul ha'ilonot ulhatzmicham. You're going to plow, or you're going to turn over dirt, but the point is to help trees. So it's not directly on the seed or directly on the land that's going to be planted, because you're doing it around the tree to sort of help the tree by having the dirt around it be softer and there, I think, more conducive to water going in and therefore watering the roots of the tree. That is a tolada of zriyah. That is an offshoot of planting, because this harisha helps things grow. So that will be prohibited min ha-Torah. That will be a biblical prohibition. That's the way the Ravad reads it. And he says, and that would explain why Esther Netiyot, the whole idea that you can plow or a field around these 10 young plants all the way up to Shemitah, that's why you need a halakha l'moshe m'sinai, because it is a Doraita prohibition. It's just not the full Doraita prohibition. So the Esther Netiyot tells you that you can for these young plants. Now, Rav Uziel points out that he saw a Beit Yisrael, a commentator on the Rambam, who had claimed that he thought what the Rambam really felt was that Choresh, plowing on Shemitah, isn't actually a full prohibition on a biblical level. And his explanation was that when the Rambam said that Esther Netiyot, that you're allowed to plow for the purpose of the 10 young plants all the way up until the Shemitah year, that when the Rambam says Halakha L'Moshe M'Sinai, he doesn't actually mean it as strictly as we would think and as technically as we would think, that sometimes the Rambam uses the words Halakha L'Moshe M'Sinai about things that are actually dirabanan. So even though he holds, this Beit Yisrael is saying that the Rambam holds that harisha, plowing, is a dirabanan, is rabbinically prohibited, you can have a halakha l'moshe m'sinai to allow the Esther Netiyot, the young plants, to be plowed, to plow around the young plants all the way up until the Shemitah year. So Rav Uziel is not going to agree, but he does agree that we do find in the Rambam the language of Halacha Moshe Mishinai about something that's even that's just derabanan. So it's a Mishnah in Trumot. It's not just the Rambam; it's others do it too. Mishnah in Trumot says that Be'emet Amru, and Be'emet Amru generally is supposed to mean Halacha Moshe Mishinai, but the Bar Tanura there says even though we generally think it's Halacha Moshe Mishinai, it doesn't have to be that way. And the Bar Tanura points out that in the first chapter of Shabbat, there's a Be'emet Amru, they really said, which sounds like Halacha Moshe Sinai, but what they said was that a Chazan, which is really an elementary school teacher, can look where the school children are learning to read, and that is actually prohibited Rabbanan, because generally reading by candlelight is prohibited Rabbanan, because you're worried that you're going to tip the candle and help the oil flow to the wick, and that's a Dalraita prohibition. So when they say Be'emet Amru that the Chazan is allowed to do it because he's teaching kids, notice that these kids were going to school on Shabbat and learning on Shabbat, the worry is that he would do that. So they said he can do it. That can't really be a Halacha Moshe Mishinai, because the thing that the only worry is a Derabanan. So it's an example of where the language of Halacha Moshe Mishinai is used even for a Derabanan. So that Ruzil agrees with. But in our sugya, in our discussion of Harisha, of plowing, he thinks it's clear from the Gemara that it's more clear that when they say Halakha Moshe Mishinai, they mean it literally, technically, as a Halakha Moshe Mishinai, and therefore it's got to be that the plowing itself is Asur D'Oraita, and therefore he can't agree with the Beit Yisrael. So instead he goes back to the Radvaz, and he accepts the Radvaz idea that you have things that are written, that aren't explicit in the Torah, they're prohibited biblically, but they're not written in the Torah, and therefore those things won't get Malkot on a Torah level. And that would be similar to, he says, another Rambam, where the Rambam will talk about something else that's not explicit in the Torah, and therefore will say, you don't get Malkot on a Torah level, that the Beit Din, the court, would not be able to give a Torah level of punishment of lashes to such a person. The example that he quotes is the Rambam says elsewhere that Hamigadef Avodat Kochavim Mechol Chayotim Azeh Over Belo Taaseh Shinemar Belo Taabdeh. So Hamigadef or Oveid Kochavim. Somebody worships Avodah Zarah in a way that's not fully delineated in the Torah can violate a Lo Taaseh, a prohibition of the Torah of Lo Taabdeh. And the Rambam writes Afa Pichen Ein Olokei won't get Malkot because the Torah didn't say it explicitly. And the example that Rav Uziel quotes is from the Rambam. I'm sorry, I had to look it up. It's not HaMegadef Oveid Kochavim, it's HaMegafef Oveid Kochavim. Somebody hugs or kisses or polishes an idolatry. So those are not ways in which, and it's not the form of worship of that idolatry. There's sort of three categories in Avodah Zarah. There's the way the worshippers of that Avodah Zarah, of that idolatry, worship it, and those will always be Asur on a Torah level, no matter what it is. Right? So even if it's like, the classic example is Zorik Evan Lamarkolis, when he throws a stone at an idol, it seems like he's being disrespectful, but if that's the way to worship that idol, then that would be pure Avodah Zarah, pure idolatry and capital punishment. Then a second level would be that those things that are special to our service of Hashem, so things like bowing down or offering sacrifices. So there, even if it's not the form of worship of Avodah Zarah, the person would be liable for it, and in the fullest way. And then there are other things that are examples of expressing respect for an Avodah Zarah, even love for an Avodah Zarah, for an idolatry, but they're not its form of worship, and they're not explicit in the Torah. They're not dedicated to how we worship Hashem. So examples of that would be polishing it or hugging it or kissing it. So the other Rambam says, you violate the Torah because it says lo ta'avdeh, and we can't worship them in any way. But there's no malkot, there's no punishment, because the Torah never makes it explicit. And the Ravid had thought that maybe it was because it's lav shebichlalot, but Rav Uziel says, no, he thinks that when you have a law in the Torah, what the Rambam means is, when you have a prohibition in the Torah that extends to many things, but the Torah only makes some of them explicit, you'll only get biblical lashes, you'll only, the person who violates the fullest way in front of a court with witness, you know, and dragged to court with witnesses and wording and all of the technical details, the only way that one will get lashes for those kinds of things is if the Torah makes it explicit in some way. And that would be true, therefore, he says, now coming back to our discussion, that would be true of Shvit, of Shemitah. And when we say that on Shemitah there are things that are prohibited in the Torah, the only ones one gets lashes for are those that are explicit in the Torah. but other ones might be prohibited as well. So that can be true of certain kinds of harisha, which was our discussion. And that's why the Rambam said, v'chol ha'osem milacha, if somebody does milacha, does somebody works the land in some way, then working the land is prohibited in the Shemitah year, and that is a violation of the Torah. It's neglecting the obligation, and it's violating the prohibition. But the Torah told us which ones one would get malka for, which ones are the fullest violation of it, such that one would get punished for it in a Beit Din. The other ones, you don't get malka. Then when the Rambam says, of a malkin oto makat mardut, so you get what we think of as drabbanan lashes, which would sound like it's only prohibited at a rabbinic level. So first, he says, it shows that you don't get Torah lashes because it wasn't explicit in the Torah, but they are prohibited on a Torah level. So, and that would be true of Tosefet as well, of the earlier part, of the things that are prohibited in the run-up to the Shemitah year, and would be why you need that halacha l'moshe m'Sinai to allow it. So where does the makat mardut come from? If we're going to say they're prohibited biblically, but there's no lashes, where do we get this makat mardut idea? Where do we get this idea that you can get these lashes that we think of as derabbanan lashes? So here, Rav Uziel says that it seems odd, because our general principle is that you get lashes for things that are explicit in the Torah. And then there are lashes, he says, for obligations as well, but only until the time of obligation has passed. Meaning a Beit Din does have the power, if somebody's neglecting an obligation, the Beit Din does have the power to discipline them, to force them to fulfill their obligation at a Torah level. So somebody's refusing to do X mitzvah, the Beit Din can discipline that person with lashes and until the person agrees to go do the mitzvah. But here, when it comes to Shemitah, that still wouldn't lead to understanding of these lashes, because we're saying the person has already violated the Torah by working the land. So where are these lashes coming from? So now Rav Uziel comes to say that it turns out that when we talk about Makat Mardut, they're not only on rabbinic prohibitions, but that whenever you have a Torah prohibition which has Malkot as part of the prohibition, even though this act is not included in those Malkot, but since this is a prohibition that the Torah applies lashes to, so then we allow Makat Mardut. Then we have this idea that you have what we ordinarily think of as rabbinic lashes. Is he says it's sort of like Chatzishir, like you haven't fully done the prohibition, but you've done it enough that we can give you Makot from a Torah level. Then the Makot is that since you don't want to fulfill the mitzvah, we give you the Malkot to say you got to agree that in the future you will fulfill this mitzvah. Another example of that is the Rambam had written that in Hilchot Melachim, that if somebody tears things and destroys things for no good reason, that is a violation of lo tashkit, right? You can't destroy things wantonly and randomly and for no good reason. But he says you only get makat mardut midivrehem. You only get makat mardut and at the rabbinic level. I mean, you don't get Torah lashes, because they're not Torah lashes for that action, for whatever reason having to do with Baal Tashkit, but you will get lashes. So that's another example where there's a Torah prohibition that's being violated, but the lashes are Derabbanan. And so too, in another case, he says that if somebody did not accept Hatra'ah, they were doing a prohibition, whatever it was, and somebody came and said, you know, if you do that, you're violating the Torah in this and this way, and the person stopped and didn't do it. 10 minutes later, they did it. Or 3 minutes later, they didn't accept the Hatra'ah. They said, oh, I'm not going to do it then. Then 3 minutes later, they do it. So the Rambam says, you can't give them lashes on a Doraita level, because for Torah level lashes, we need the person to have acted right immediately after accepting the Hatra'ah and recognizing the Hatra'ah. If this person didn't accept the Hatra'ah, and they did it anyway, but without accepting the Hatra'ah, we'll give them makat mardut, we'll give them these kinds of lashes, and the Rambam writes, and you'd give it even on an isur shel divrei sofrim, even on a rabbinic prohibition, implying that you certainly would give it for a Doraita prohibition. So the Rav Uziel has shown that these kinds of lashes, for all that we think of them as being for rabbinic prohibitions, they're actually much broader than that. They can be given both for rabbinic prohibitions and also for several situations where there is a violation of the Torah at a Torah level, but there's no Torah level established punishment, we'll give makat mardut for it. So therefore, he concludes that somebody plows a field on Shavuot after having planted it. So since this plowing is helping the seeds be covered over and be more firmly planted in the ground, that's planting. And therefore, that would get biblical lashes. Somebody did it in front of with a Beit Din and warning and witnesses and all of those things. Second level would be somebody plows a field, but in this field there are trees that are grown, and your plowing is for the sake of the trees, to help the trees. So that's a violation of the Torah in terms of Shemitah years. That's a violation of an obligation to let the land rest, v'shavita ha'aretz, and a violation of the prohibition against plowing, that the Torah says, and that person will get makat mardut. So makat mardut, this is a reminder that the Uziel had established that you can have makat mardut both for rabbinic prohibitions, but you can also have makat mardut for biblical prohibitions where there is no possibility of biblical lashes for various reasons that can come up. It's not explicit in the Torah, maybe, or the person didn't accept Hatra'ah, and that would be part of Sadchah lo Tizra'ah, and that would be true not only of planting or of plowing, it would be true of lots and lots of ways of working the land that would be included in the Torah prohibition of working the land, and that's how you can get to that situation. So those are some introductory ideas about Shemitah and awareness of Shemitah, as well as some ideas about the difference between biblical and rabbinic prohibitions and how we respond to them and the kinds of punishment that we give out. And that was Rav Uziel's discussion of some Shemitah issues for the 9th of Elul of Tuf Resh Tzadivav of 1936. This is a Response of the Day. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.